with Alfredo Garza, part of the Garza family that settled in Washington County during the 1960s. I'm right there. This interview is being taken at the Shute Library in Hillsboro. Today is the 28th December, 1999. I am Barbara Doyle. So, first I need a little background from you. Where were you born and when?
I was born in Edna, Texas, February
16th.
February 16th, 1951.
All right, in Texas.
Jackson County, yes.
And when did you come here? Here being Oregon, first
of all. The first trip we made to Oregon, I think, was in 1964. And we first started our trip as migrant workers to West Texas. And we lived in a labor camp in West Texas for a week or so. And there was not enough work for the whole family, so one of the relatives that my dad was traveling with told us that we could come to Oregon, that Oregon wasn't that far, and that we had a big family and everything could work. So we packed our 57 ship, a Ford, 57 Ford, and headed to Oregon. Well, we were a family of nine, and we realized when we got to Arizona that we didn't have enough money. So Dad had to borrow money, call back to the bank, or get a loan. I think we got $100 or $150. That brought us all the way to, we made it to Portland, or Gresham, actually. And when we were in Gresham, we were looking for a family that Dad knew in the past from our area around Victoria, Texas. And so we were looking for that person, like at the post office. We were looking, seeing the post office people could help us identify the name. And we couldn't locate him. So we went and rented an apartment. We had to find a place to stay. Because on our way here, we slept in the wagon or wherever we could, and roadside parks. We just pull over the street. And then when we got here, well, Dad said, well, we have to find a place to stay. So we went up to several places, and one place, this lady said, well, I have just a small apartment with a kitchen and stuff. You guys are quite a few. And asked us why we were here, we were vacation or what. We told her, no, we're here to work. We're here because we hear that there's a lot of farm labor and we want work. And she says, you sure you're not here for the Seattle World Fair? And we said, oh, no, we're not. So, I don't remember how many days we were there. I think it was a little over a week, maybe 9 days. In the meantime, my mom wrote back to Texas and asked some of the relatives back home if they had an address for the people that we were looking for, the Garcias. And they wrote back and told us, yes, they had an address. And finally, we were able to find them through that address, and they were located in a labor camp up in Dayton, Oregon, in the Grand Island. So we visited them and we made contact, and we were all happy because we didn't feel stranded anymore. We knew somebody, and they introduced us to our first farm labor job, which is picking strawberries. And they also gave us a place to stay. We stayed at the...
Excuse me, Garcias were another migrant farm people?
Right.
Okay.
Right. They've been here many years before. And the owners of that camp were the Stein Group.
Stein?
Stein Group. I don't remember. S-T-E-I-N.
That was the name of the farm
family?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The farm owners. And so they provided us a place to stay. I think there was like 10 or 12 little cabins in that labor camp. And the cabins were not very big. They were like 14 by 12 or something like that. And we had all of us live in one of them. We had like a bunk bed and one bed, and then we had a small kitchen stove. And I can't remember, I think we had a refrigerator. But we had no indoor plumbing. And
did you have electricity?
Yes, we had electricity. It was cold. We weren't used to living in this conditions, in this rainy, humid weather. but anyway, we went out to pick, and I remember how humid it was out in the fields to pick strawberries. And I hated it. I disliked it. And then when it rained, it even got worse when it did, because it was all on your back. And then you were toiling in the mud and stuff. But then when the weather was great, it was better, because it was not as... The conditions were better.
Yeah. Do you know about what time of year you arrived?
We arrived in, it was after school was out, so it was in early June, late May, early June. Yeah, just the strawberry season, perfect time. Because it's after the first week, around the first week the strawberry season begins. And we picked berries around Amity and Dayton area.
And now, who is we? How many were working? Your father?
My father and four boys, and my mom. Yeah. And then I had a sister, older sister, but she worked some, and then, well, she didn't work. She worked, but at a different setting, and a different, like in a packing company.
So did you all earn the same amount of money per container of strawberries, or however
right.
it worked?
Right, it was all piece labor, kind of, you know, according to how many crates you picked there, yeah.
So with basically six people working.
Right.
Was your income enough to keep you going?
On good days, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, times weren't very gloomy once we worked, you know, like 7 days a week. Then we were able to earn a good income. And since we didn't have to pay rent because the labor camps, there was no rent to pay. So we were able to accumulate some money. And my dad liked that because it was better than what he was used to in Texas, because he was a farmer in Texas and they cut back on a lot of the sharecropping, which that's what he did because of the government control over how much they had control over how much cotton could be grown. And then there was problems if you didn't get enough land to grow your cotton or whatever, your commodity, then you had pesticide problems in the boll weevil. So there was bad times for harvesting. And that's one of the reasons why we left. It was hard times.
So now you're up here and picking strawberries, but the strawberry season lasts about a month or something like that,
less
right?
Less than that, right.
Yeah. And then why?
And then we went on to pole beans. There used to be, now they have a hybrid, which is a bush bean picked by machine. But back then they had a pole bean, which had to be strung on poles long. They had thousands of acres there at Grand Island of pole beans, soybean, picked pole beans. And that was probably another month's work. And then from the pole beans we went to the raspberry, and from the raspberry we did the blackberry. And then from there it was getting later, and in September, early September, we do the prune. And by then it was time to go back to go. That first year we went back to Texas.
Okay, now let me just ask. I mean, you said you got a place to stay, a fairly small building to
right.
live in.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some pieces of furniture in there. But
right.
there were nine of you in one car, which sounds pretty crowded. So
wow.
when you got up here, did you have pots and pans, sheep? I mean, you know, what did you have with you, and what did you get when you were up here besides a place to sleep and sit?
I know we had blankets.
Okay.
But I don't know how many pots and pans we did, because Mom, I can't remember what we had. But I remember going, that Mom would go, they would go to a Salvation Army or and buy things that we need.
Yeah.
Clothes.
Okay, so
we were very limited on the stuff that we brought.
Yeah. Okay, so you had to supply some of those things here. When you left,
right.
did you take them back with you? Did you leave them here to come back to next year?
I think we did. Yeah. I think we left some things here in one of the cabins, because we planned on returning the next year, and we did return.
Yeah. Now, the planning on returning, is that something that the farmer offered you, or you told the farmer you'd like to come back? Or?
Well, the farmer was happy with our production and what we did, so, and our harvest, so they would invite us to come back.
The farmer invites the
right.
microphone. Okay. Now, I've heard a story from somebody who said that migrant workers would be paid, but their Social Security part of their pay was taken out. And this particular person said, well, he knew that was a lot of baloney, because the farmer didn't know the names or the Social Security numbers of the migrant workers. So, in a sense, the migrant workers were being ripped off by the farmer or whoever was in charge of paying. Now, did you have any of those kind of experiences where you felt that your family was exploited by the farmer?
Well, I was very young, and I don't, when I look at my Social Security statement, I didn't start earning Social Security until 68 or something like that. They weren't taking, so I never personally remember encountering.
Okay. Any
I do remember we used to work from sunup to sundown in harvest, and where a farmer was paying us hourly, and I was always good at math. So I would keep the hours for everybody in a little booklet. And after 2 weeks or a week and a half of tallying all the hours, because there was five of us working hourly at that time for that farmer. And after tallying up the hours and presenting the hours to the farmer, my dad being present, he says, oh no, this is too many hours. You couldn't have worked all the time. And I told him, we were working, remember, you wanted to get the crop out, and we were working up from sun up to sundown trying to get this crop out. Oh yeah, but you made a mistake here somewhere. This is too many hours. And I looked at Dad and I said, Dad, we don't have to put up with this. We don't have to stay here. Let's, you know. And he says, he kind of looked down at me and says, for me to behave, to be nice. And so I went home and I was disgusted. And I remember just not wanting to come downstairs in the evening, because, I mean, my judgment was good. I knew that my hours were right. And, but later that night, the farmer's wife called our farm, because she was also telling me how, and she called to apologize. Because she said, so that was one incident.
Good for you. And good for the wife.
Right. So there was times when we were promised good crops by some farmers. Crops didn't produce, and then we, you know, but some of those are natures, Mother Nature. But I can't remember any Social Security.
Well, that was just something that somebody had told me, and those things kind of made an impression on me. So you obviously got along well enough with the farmer then that they asked you to come back the next year.
Right.
And no more shortchanging you on hours.
Because we were good workers.
Yeah. Right. And you paid attention. You kept good records.
Right.
Right. So you were here then, the whole family was here in 1964 for the harvest season, and then you all went back to Texas?
We returned to Texas, and then we came back. I guess we saved enough money to winter over Texas, and by the time we were coming the next year, we would go back and do our school year there.
Yeah.
And then we would come back in late May.
And was there any earning capacity in Texas?
My dad would work.
Okay.
He'd be about the only one, because we were in school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we would work weekends to offset that with some farmers in the rice fields. I would work in Texas.
Yeah. So you came here in 64 and went back. Then you came in 65 and went back.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were here in 65, were you at the same farm?
Right, the summer of 65 we were.
Okay.
And we earned some income in Texas also, because the planting season for cotton is in March, and so we would work on weekends in the cotton field, hoeing. And when the cotton's young, we clean it, get the grass, the weeds out, weed it, space it.
So after this second year, was there any big things to remember there? Did you have a better place to stay in? Did you earn more money per hour or per crate?
I think after the first year, for the kids anyway, it was like an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think for my mom it was stressful because of the trip. For us, it was kind of like, I remember the first time we saw snow in Nevada, or was it Arizona? It was Arizona. We thought it was sand. We didn't know, but it was good, I think, for the kids, because we could go back and we could tell people about our adventure, even though we wouldn't tell them about that part. So. After the second year, you asked me, did I feel...
Was that the same relationship with the farmer?
Right.
Did you stay there for the whole season?
Right, we stayed there for the whole summer.
Okay. And were you invited back for the third year?
We were, but my dad started becoming more aware of other possibilities.
Yeah.
And so he was meeting more people, local people, farmers, and just business people. And they arranged for us to come and work in a farm, Newburgh, up on the Chehalis Mountain. And that was a large farm, and they had a variety of crops. So we decided to winter over. Dad decided to stay. And I was one of those people who didn't want to stay. I wanted to return back to Texas.
This is the end of
our third year. The second year, right.
The second, okay.
End of the second, the fall of 65. And so Dad decided that we're staying because we can get this job. The whole family can work, whether at least the boys. And it's more stable, we don't have to come and go. But I'm already, 15 years old? My other brothers are 16, 17. And by that time we had my oldest sister, she was 18, she'd graduated. She hadn't graduated yet, I'm sorry. But we were enough of us working my dad figured we could stay. But it was miserable because of the rain. We worked in the fall in the prunes and the fields and went to school. We would work weekends and go to school during the week and work after school.
Now, you said this was Newburg, and you were up on Chehalem Mountain. So right. I know a little bit about it because I live up there.
All right.
So were you going to school in Newburg or up here in Washington County?
We were going to school in Washington County.
Okay.
Hillsboro right. School District.
All right. So,
but let me go back a little bit.
Sure.
Because I think I got confused on my years because it was 60. We came and went 64. We ended up staying 66. Or was it 60? Well, 69. Let me go back. I need to think because I didn't think
that
was over. Because I graduated in 69. I was a junior in 68, 67. So it was 66 that we stayed. The fall of 66, we stayed. After coming and going for a couple of years.
Which had to be kind of tough, wasn't it? I mean, to
you leave all your friends behind.
Yeah.
You're at an age where your girlfriend, you have a girlfriend. You miss the people, you miss your friends. And when we first put in the school here, we didn't identify. It was all Anglo when we were like,
yeah,
oh my
God. You all struggled.
Not that we weren't treated bad. It was just that it was a whole different setting.
I mean, you all spoke English.
Yes.
So that was not a problem.
No. We all
but
did well
but you
school.
Weren't like the white people that were here.
And we weren't used to that.
No. So your reception within the community was much better in Texas than it was here.
I think so. Yeah. We had friends. I mean, we had friends that we grew up with. We expected to go back. It was a surprise because my dad didn't plan it with it. He just said, we're staying.
Oh. Well, I mean, I guess you had to finish high school before you could say, I'm going to do it on my own or going to go on my own.
Yeah. But, in those times you did what they told you. You there was no, let's discuss it with the children. Nowadays, it's, what's this going to do to the children?
Yeah. Well, it seems like it didn't do bad things to you.
No,
and your
siblings. No, it didn't. It didn't. No, my dad was right. Yeah. You know, but when I was that age, I was right.
Yeah. So now you've decided to stay over, and now you need income that's going to support you through the winter and the non-harvest seasons up here. So, do you still live in a place on a farm?
We lived on a farm where we were given a big house.
Nice.
This house had a big kitchen. It had a living space. It had 1, 2, 3 bedrooms. So it was a 2-story house. So it was very adequate.
And this was in on the mountain, but basically the Washington County side of the
right.
mountain. Okay. Do you know the name of the?
The Ziegler's, Melbourne Ziegler's farm.
And is that where you folks stayed until you moved out of?
We stayed with him till we moved and Dad bought a house in Juanita.
Okay, so how many years were you there with Ziegler's?
I'm guessing we fall of 66 to sometime in 72.
That's quite a lot.
8 years, yeah.
Was life getting better?
Yes, economically better.
But you all had to work. You and right. your brothers basically were working.
Right. We worked all through. We would work every summer after high school. I mean, when we were in high school, we were working summers in the field. Yeah.
And did you have any problems with Ziegler in terms of getting the right pay for the right number of hours?
That was the man that I was talking about. We had a misunderstanding on the hours.
Oh.
Yeah. And but no, after that he was very, we came to an agreement, and we were more, he respected us a lot because he knew the value of our work, that, you know, that we were honest people.
Now, somewhere as I heard the statement, it was a big family. Was it a benefit for the Garzas to have a father and four sons who could go out there and work in the field?
Given that we were a big family, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so you have, there are five brothers and you have two sisters. And Margaret was too young to work?
I have three brothers and three sisters.
Three brothers.
So there's four boys and three girls.
Okay.
And Margaret and Rita were the young ones. So they were starting, they were working, they were helping.
They worked in the field?
They could, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me go back to something you said before. You didn't have any plumbing in this one place.
In the labor camp, yeah.
Now, what did you do for water, for cooking, for cleaning, for laundry? And
we had to go and get in a pail of water. Just move water, go outside. There was a main faucet system, central faucet system, where you'd walk outside, go get water, and bring it back in. And in a container.
And that's what you would use for cooking?
Right.
Or for?
Oh, there were showers, but they were offset. They were not within the, they were outside, away from the little cabin.
All right. So there was a place for bathing purposes.
There was.
What about for laundry?
Yes, there was, but I don't remember much about that because Mom did that. Mom was the hardest working person of the area because she had to get up early to make lunch, to make breakfast, and send us off to work. And then she'd come join us at work, and she would work with us throughout the day. And then we would get home and kick back and play, watch TV. But she would have to do our clothes, get our clothes ready, and then cook dinner for us, and her day wasn't over till about 10 o'clock at night.
She said she cried a lot.
She had it real tough. Yeah. Well, she didn't like it here, but she would, she was very loyal to my dad.
Now, how about growing up here? I mean, you obviously came as a teenager, but you still had some growing years before you were, quote, an adult that could do what you wanted to do.
Right.
What was it like in the community? You said there's a lot of white kids here in the community.
Right.
So how did they treat you, and how did you fit in?
Well,
I think
through my high school years, 3 years that I was here, I got involved in three fights due to racial tension.
Was that and good or bad? I mean, to have only three fights, was that good or was that bad?
I guess I wasn't afraid to fight because I was a wrestler in high school.
Oh. In which case, they were kind of dumb to take you on, weren't they?
They weren't bad, but they didn't make you feel good. I mean, you knew that there was people, we knew there was racial tensions in Texas before. And here it was more of a hidden thing. It would surprise you when you hear somebody, you know, call you dirty Mexican, something like that. But
for no reason.
For no reason, other than Yes.
So, I mean, do you have any idea why you were picked out, just because you were different? Were there a lot of other students around that were Mexican or
No, there was Japanese, Hispanic, I remember. Asian.
Yeah, well, they were treated badly, too.
Yeah.
Chinese were treated badly, the Irish were treated badly, the blacks weren't allowed.
Yeah, there was no blacks. I think in my graduating class, there was three Hispanics.
Three
was Chicano.
So you were really in the minority.
Right.
There weren't too many other...
There were no blacks.
No? Yeah.
Uh-huh. And, but even in an education setting, there were still racist kind of, how do you say, from the teachers themselves.
Tell me a little more about that.
Well, I was in my sophomore class. It was in physical science. And we had started school in my physical science class. I always enjoyed science. I'm a biologist for the state of Texas. Able to maintain above a 90 average for that 9 weeks. 90 or 6 weeks, whatever the break was. And at the end of the 9 weeks period, we would go before the teacher and they'd tell us what kind of grade we were going to receive for that period. But we were like lab partners. We had partners. And I remember my partner was Steve Fowles. And he said, "Fred, get up there. It's your turn to get up there and get your grade." And so I went up there, and the teacher was Mr. Hubert. And he says to me, he says, "Fred, you've really done really well. You've maintained above a 90. And you should get an A, but I don't think it's fair for the other students if I give you an A, since you were late coming to class for almost a month, so I'm going to give you a B." And so I went back and sat down, and Steve says, "Well, did you get your A, man? I got an A." I said, "No, I got a B." And he says, "Why?" He says, "Why?" And he got upset, you know, after I told him. Well, I was upset too, but our parents always told us that we were not supposed to complain about school. Or they didn't want to hear problems about school, so I just kept it within myself. You know, it really, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to react to that. So
yeah, it's hard when you're 15 or 16, right, or something like that.
Right. See, I had the opposite thing happen to me in Texas. Mr. Davis was the name of my teacher, history teacher, 8th grade in Texas, when I returned, and I was a month getting back in the fall to Texas when we were coming and going. And on one of my exams, I got a C, but I had just been there a week, and so he gave me a B, because he said he was impressed and other students didn't do as well. He said, "Well, I'm going to give," and he told the whole class, "I'm giving Fred a B because he's only been here a week. And you guys have been here, you know, all month, and you guys are doing very well." So the opposite happened.
Wow. So did this kind of thing happen more often in school here?
No, that was probably the only case that it happened to me. I had other circumstances where one of my math teachers, I couldn't make them. I was in physical, I don't know if I should say this. I was in physical, I was in, in wrestling. So I had to go do a morning schedule. I had to go in early, and I couldn't make the morning run because I had no one to take me to meet the bus. Because usually the bus would pick you up, since we lived in the farm right by the house. But if you had more activities after school, you had to meet the bus, wherever. It was a central point where you picked up kids. And I could, it was about 3 miles, and I could make it. I couldn't make it. It was impossible because my dad was working, and I didn't drive. And so I told that to one of my teachers. I can't remember his name. Shit. And he said, just try to make it whenever you can. And I know you can do the work, because I know I've seen your work.
This is for your math class.
For my math class. And he said, and as long as you get a passing grade, I'll pass you. You know, I'll give you whatever grade you get. You don't, just try to make it. And I didn't, but I think he passed me anyway. I wasn't able to make most of my classes. And so there was good teachers too. They were supportive.
And aside from the fights with three kids, how did the other students react to?
There was curiosity. I remember getting groups after leaving the school, we'd meet somewhere, go somewhere, and they'd ask, or a party, and they'd ask, you know, questions. Same thing they were talking about here. You know, what brought me to Oregon and all that. And they would sit there and they'd listen, and they would be real. How do you say it? Interested.
Accepted.
Accepted, yeah. Curious. More curiosity.
Okay. I've heard different things from different people. And one of them had to do with dating.
Right.
So, how did the girls treat? How did the gringo girls treat
I think
the
Chicano
some of them boys?
Crushes on me, but I was too shy.
Yeah?
I didn't know. I was just a, my girlfriend in Texas was a Hispanic girl. And I guess I didn't know how to react to them. You know, it was like, I was too shy. And
well, how about?
I think they liked me. I mean, they were friendly toward me.
Right, so now you had older brothers.
Right.
What were their reactions? Did you talk to them about it and get advice, or did they take a different approach from you and were not so shy?
We're basically about the same. We, you know, we never really exchanged. We were kind of private about those things. Who you were dating.
Within your family.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to have to talk to several of you, of your siblings, to get a full picture.
Right. Well, I think we mostly looked for Hispanic girls because that's what we were used to. We didn't know the cross culture thing. We were not used to it.
Were there many other people in your school and where you lived who were Hispanic or Latino background?
There was several families, I wouldn't say a lot. There were some families that we knew. Yeah.
And when did this big push come to start Centro Cultural? Were you in any way involved in that?
I was indirectly involved through my parents, through my mom and dad. They were involved through the church.
Okay, now this was after they
moved? I guess I was directly involved, not indirectly.
Was this after they moved into their own house?
Yes, I think it was about
okay,
that
time. Okay, because you said they moved to Cornelius.
Right.
Centro.
Right, it's after we moved into our house.
All right, so what was your role in this?
I just help them when they, when it originated, I remember that there was Father Beezer. It was a church thing too. He was organizing the families. And we would have dinners at churches to do a fundraiser for this group of people. Let me get a little bit confused here, because there was also a group of people, a club called Los Amigos, and a lot of his families had to do with the Santa Cruz and the Father Beecher that organized it. And so I would help with dinners, help them, whatever they needed to. And they would have dinners at different churches. I know they had them in Hillsborough and Forest Grove. I think they had them in Beaverton. And they were trying to raise money so they could get a place to start Central Coast.
So you were not one of the movers, you were one of the helpers there.
When I was, yeah. And I became involved in a project at Central Coast Tudal called Ormatex, where they were getting products from Tektronix and training young kids to work in those youth training for a job, future job.
They still have something like that, don't they?
I'm not sure.
When did you leave Oregon and move back to Texas?
Oh, in 83, but there's, no. I became more and more involved. That was in 74 when I did that. And then in 75, I went away to college in Eugene. And I would come back and work the summers. And the Oregon, the Centro Cultural people had more of an organized group. And they had bought a building by that time. They bought an old house and a lot. And then there was a medical need. There was medical services, but the people with migrant education, Centro Cultural, didn't feel that the medical needs weren't being met for the Hispanic community. Because there was an incident where a young girl died. That was in one of the camps, I think. Virginia Garcia.
Just a little bit louder.
Virginia Garcia was a child that died from some kind of a bacterial infection. And so that prompted the Hispanic community, Centro Cultural Migrant Education, to try and create a facility where migrants or Hispanics could receive better health care, outreach kind of work. So they organized, I wasn't here at the time, but they organized that through county funds and through Centro. There was meetings, and then there was meetings also that involved the Catholic Charities, what's that called?
That's a good word, Catholic Charities.
Yeah. And they decided to fund a clinic just to migrants. And that was, I think, in the year 75, I think. And then when I came back to work in the summers, that was already organized, and they needed an outreach person to work as a liaison between the schools or the migrant camps through migrant education, and to be able to better serve the migrants, the children and the adults that needed the health care. And that's where I came. I had worked, I gotta go back now. In 74, I did work with migrant education for a few months in doing the home consulting. That's where you organize healthcare for, there's federal monies that are allocated for healthcare for migrant workers. And I was an outreach person, a liaison, that would go to the camps and, we would register people for the migrant program, kids. then they would receive educational assistance and also health, doctors, dental care. So my job was to go out there and identify and register the kids. And I did that. And then I went to college. And then I came back the summer. And I got involved again in the summer doing that. But I was giving a bigger task to provide the people from Catholic Charity who were saying, well, you need to, we're giving you this money for healthcare. We're giving you money for to build a small clinic. But we need you to provide numbers for us. How many people are out there that really need help? Kids, adults. So my boss said, it's your job to go out there and bring these people in. So I said, okay. That was Joe Garcia. And so I would go to all the camps and register the kids. And I would talk to mostly the mothers of families and ask them about health needs.
Now, this is all in Washington County.
This is all in Washington County. This all started through Centro Cultural.
And how many camps were there that you had to go to? About how many?
I guess 10 or 12.
And how many people might be in a camp?
There were some camps that had over 100 people, and there were some that had only 8 or 12 people.
What were the overall conditions like in the camp? I mean, this is not 10 years after you folks came here.
We were basically the same as I described. Some were worse. Some were real in bad shape, unclean.
Was anybody around to make the farmer or the owner or the person who managed the site provide better care and facilities for the migrant workers?
Sure there was. There was the health department.
Well, yeah, but was it all enforced?
I don't know. Harry Camp was the director of the health department when I was working for my education. And since I was working with medical needs, there was some children, infants, that were getting sick from diarrhea. And I didn't know if it was the water or just a viral thing. So I inquired about if the water had been checked, if the water, the potable water, drinking water had been checked for some kind of contaminant. I was just inquiring. So I took it upon myself to call the director of the health department and inquire. Well, he didn't like that. So he called my boss and told him they had done all this. That why was I inquiring? Well, I was inquiring because I was the one that I was doing. And so, needless to say, I didn't talk to Mr. Harry Camp anymore. But I did volunteer also that I volunteered working with the health department because they were also assisting with meeting the medical needs. So I was bringing people to the clinic during the day. I was taking people to the St. Vincent's Hospital, adults there for care, and in a Volkswagen, my 67, running all over the country. But I was getting paid. I was a paid staff. And for 8 hours. Anything after 8 hours was my volunteer. I remember being late there because a lot of families would work. And the only time you could take the a lot of ladies, but there was also men too, with hernia size of baseballs that needed surgery, different kinds of ailments that it would have. The need would have been met early on. They wouldn't have to, you know, suffer problems with diabetes. And
can I go back and ask a question? When you wanted to find out about whether the water was contaminated, was there ever any answer to your question?
That the water was a leak.
Was it?
I assume so. I was supposed to ask questions.
Okay, so you really don't know. You were just told it's okay.
Right.
All right.
You also had a family that was checked that positive for TB, and there was a big scare, and everybody was scared. They didn't know how to handle it. It never scared me. I mean, they were normal people, and it was interesting. It turned out that they were positive. It just the test was shown positive. But different, and the clinic. So Centro Cultural organized, they had a board, they organized the clinic. And we proved to the Catholic Charities that there was a need here in this area. And so they funded us and continued to fund us. I also became member of the board of Centro Cultural and the Virginia Garcia Clinic for several years. Until I left. Texas.
Now, what made you go off to college? There was obviously some time between finishing high school and going to college.
The strawberry. Oh, fun. I had a good job after high school. I was earning a good income. But I was not challenged enough by what I did at my job. And, I just, for my personal, I wanted to be challenged by an education. I was curious.
Were you the first in your family to go off to college?
No, my oldest sister was. She went to nursing school to become a, LVN. Yeah. She went for a 1 year training for LVN, a school. And then, it was
actually. Because she didn't like the strawberry fields either?
Right. well, to get away from that kind of labor work.
Yeah.
And
then there are still two brothers who are older than you, right?
Right. They went in the military, and that was Vietnam era. So my two older brothers were in the military. And then when they came back, they weren't interested. They had taken some kind of training. One had trained as an air kit mechanic, and the other one as a radar specialist. So they would see some formal training in service.
Do they work in
the
agricultural field?
Nope, they work for an electronic
firm. Okay. So nobody from your family is back in the fields. You moved from the fields, out of the fields in one generation.
Well, yeah, we broke away in the last generation, but the generations previous to us were all.
Yeah, but I mean, when you came here, you were migrant laborers and you worked in the fields. That's
right.
Where you earned your money.
Right.
And your generation, none of them work there now. They're
right.
All out in
right.
a different kind of business.
Right. Right. And the youngest is working for Boeing. We all ended up with good jobs. Oregon was very, very good to us.
Mostly. All right, Mark, said you were involved in civil rights. Was that the work with the church and getting the clinic going and that? Was that the civil rights part, or was this something else?
Civil rights.
Yeah, that's what she said.
I left before I think what she's talking about was treatment of the police. Hispanics here.
Oh, talk about that, please.
Well, it seemed like there was a lot of Hispanics that were being pulled over. It seemed like they were being Hispanic.
You mean driving and being
driving,
pulled over?
Yeah. And then they were charged with drunk driving or whatever. And the Justice Department got a hold of that information. And so they came here to Hillsborough, Washington County, to review and see what was going on. Why were there more Hispanics, given that the population is predominantly Anglo, why were there more Hispanics that were being charged with driving offenses and what have you? But I met at a couple of their meetings, but I didn't get the end results because it was a long process. I left before.
So was there justification for what the police did?
Yes. I mean, was there justification for what the Justice Department
did? No, what the police did in terms of pulling Hispanic drivers over or pulling people over.
I got pulled over and accused of drunk driving, but I never went through there. The police that pulled me over was lying. He was fabricating. He was saying things that I was telling him things in my language to him about. I was cursing to him, you know, telling him. And he put on the thing, it says race, he put Mexican on there. And I went to the chief of police and I talked to him about it. And he says, "Were you drinking?" I says, "Yes, I was drinking." "Were you drunk?" I said, "No." And he says, "Well, why do you think he stopped you?" And I said, "There was no reason for that man to stop me. He was parked right here in front of this park right here. Mm-hmm. And I was driving my Volkswagen through here. And he pulls me over. He pulls me over for no reason. The light was green. I went through it. I wasn't speeding. He pulls me over. It's like 1 o'clock at night. In the morning." And then he claims that I was avoiding him and I was weaving, and then he had followed me for 2 or 3 miles back. That he was behind me watching me. But actually he was sitting right here. And I don't remember them giving me my rights. And when I tried to find a lawyer, they said, "Well, if they didn't beat you up, then you don't have a case. If you didn't get physically harmed, you don't have a case, because we go before, and I told them, I said, "This guy fabricated, he lied on this report." So I couldn't find anybody. So I just didn't.
So you had it on your record, in other words, your driving record.
I had it on my, they were trying out the probationary period. It was going to go on my record for a year, and then it was going to be dropped off if I didn't commit any other offense relating to
it. Or run across a similar cop.
Right. Well, I ran into him. I was with my girlfriend in the bar, in one of the McMinniman pub.
Yeah.
And I was so mad because she's so crackered. Don't say that. I was mad because he was a liar. And Margaret knows about it. So she worked in the police department. How they were liars, racist. She heard him. She heard him. She wasn't there. I don't know if she told me.
No, she didn't tell me that.
Right.
But I mean, you know, you can read the papers nowadays and you know they do the same thing in some other parts of the country.
Right.
I mean, if you're black and you're driving a car, a nice looking car on the New Jersey Turnpike, you get pulled over.
Oh, right. Yeah. But hopefully it's gotten better here.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, it's clear that there's still a fair amount of prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of non-acceptance in that. But how do you feel about it?
I don't like to think about it, but I feel that I can defend myself, or try to, in a political manner, not being physical.
Okay.
Yeah.
In other words, you can talk your way through something. But you try to.
I try to.
Okay. Are you and your brothers and sisters exceptions to the extent that you've gone on for other education?
Yeah, I think because of my dad, my mom.
What did they do when you say because of them? What did they do?
They had a strong, they wanted us to finish the high school. They had a big push for education. They've always had.
Okay. So you all finished high school, but then some of you went on for more school. Were you pushed to do that, or was that just
I became a pusher just like my dad.
Oh.
Once I was in college, I encouraged my younger sisters to go to college and my brothers. And I would help my brother, my older brother, I remember telling him, because he did go to college for a few courses, and I remember with this man, encouraged my older brother. And my youngest sister, Margaret, I remember serving as a counselor for her, telling her, Margaret, if you want to do well in school, you have to do it now in high school, you have to take all these classes. So I was preparing her with her math, take as much math as you can, take your sciences, your chemistry, you gotta take biology, chemistry.
Did she like you for that?
She had a good head, so she never complained, she worked hard. And I think it paid off. She ended up going to Lewis and Clark, and she did well. She did well in high school. She was, I think, in 20%.